Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here.
Reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance.
Like your first home expansion.
Or your first big lightning strike.
There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents.
Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Your child has so much potential, but your local schools may not be right for them. Check out K-12. K-12-powered schools are accredited tuition-free online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
Does God. Welcome to the Deconstructionist Podcast. I am your host, John Williamson, and we're back with part two of my conversation with Tim Morton. So if you haven't listened to the first part yet, hit pause on this one. Go back and listen to part one first. If you've already listened to part one, well, then welcome back for part two and the conclusion of my interview with Tim Morton. Again, just couldn't tell you how much fun this was. For those of you who listened to the first part already, really reminded me of some of the really great conversations we've had previously with Pete Rollins. Got to get him back on. So that's on my agenda and list of things to do. But really hoping I can connect the two to have some conversations. I think they have a lot in common, and I think it'd be really cool, special conversation to have. So maybe we'll get that done. That's on my list of New Year's resolutions, maybe. So anyway, Tim is the Rita Shea Guffey Chair in English at Rice University. He's collaborated with folks such as Bjork, Laurie Anderson, Jennifer Walsh, Adam McKay, Jeff Bridges, Olafur Eliasson, and Pharrell Williams, to name a few. He's also written numerous books and essays on philosophy, ecology, literature, music, art, architecture, design, and food. Again, just had a blast talking with him. And so we talk more about his new book, Hell in Search of a Christian Ecology. Go check it out. All the notes are in the show notes, of course. And without further ado, I give you Tim freaking Morton.
Is God even here? Does she care?
Yeah, there's, you know, what's funny is I've heard you mention that before, and the first thing that popped into my mind was, well, you know, when you are a part of the people group who think you're a shit parent, you know, there's a amount of humility that's baked in there that creates a mechanism within you that where you're always trying to be better. And I think for the goodies, as you put it, when you feel as if you've arrived, whether it's, you know, being a parent or some sense of justice, when you feel like you've arrived there, you stop trying.
Wow.
There's no more effort.
This is a very good argument for a genuinely spiritual approach to politics, in a way. What do I mean? Right. And again, I'm saying you can be religious even when you think you're not being, right? You can be exclusive. You can be about inclusion and exclusion, right? The basic narcissism. And unfortunately, all groups are narcissists until you really work on them. I was in group psychoanalysis for 8 years, right? And it's like, just default. Any group, including relating to yourself, which is a group, is a narcissist, bad in a bad way, narcissist disorder, right? Based on scapegoating. I'm the champion scapegoat. You know, I will sign up for any scapegoat mission. You know, I feel like I get paid to say the wrong thing in public. And then even when I think I'm saying the right thing, I'm saying the wrong. I'm like Donkey in Shrek, right? In any group, there's a scapegoat wanted sign. I'm jumping up and down at the back going, pick me, pick me. So I know this. I've been excluded and abandoned and left out. So like terrible, terrible. And the cool bit, it seemed to me, about the Christianity on the face of it, having not even wanted to know about it for 30, 40 years of my life, was that it's all about the seemingly evil, seemingly scapegoat, seemingly outsider, stranger, neighbor people, right? And just like keeping that energy. And why? Because in a funny way, just knowing, this is my way of thinking about it right now. Maybe it's more like think feeling about it. Yeah. But it's kind of like, imagine you're 2D. Yeah. Your whole world is flatland. All the anger, all the rage, all the politics, all the listening to records, everything happens on this 2D surface, like a sheet of paper, and you're a stick figure. And somebody comes along and says, actually, you are 3D. You're not 2D, you are 3D. And you can't get to that 3D world because you're 2D, right? And that, hence that funny feeling that you're just saying of like lapsedness or delay or difference or space or flaw, or there's something, that thing that one could call in a nice way transcendental, right? There's a kind of crack in your universe. And so what a blessed relief. Actually, that all the hate and all the love and all the jealousy and all the churning is on this little 2D surface, but actually we're 3D, right? And somehow that guy, and perhaps Buddha, other people, was saying, you're 3D, you know? You're 3D. You're not 2D, you're 3D. And just knowing that you're 3D. So like I was in Julian of Norwich's like little cell where she was an anchorite, and she had this vision of a wool, of a hazelnut, you know, and she's looking at it. Apparently, and God's saying, that's the whole universe, right? She's living in about 1300. She's like, that's the whole universe, right? That's the same thing, right? You're 3D. The universe is this tiny little 2D sliver, yeah, or like a hazelnut. Knowing that, right, like sometimes I just take comfort in the fact that in X million years' time, the Andromeda galaxy will mesh with the Milky Way galaxy, right? It's just good to know that. Right, just good to know that we live in outer space.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. One of the things that I have to get you to talk about, because I've heard you mention this before, and I thought this was such a cool way to put it. You've mentioned that part of being alive is to be a wound, and that the white version of Christianity is an attempt to get rid of that. I thought that was incredible. Yeah, talk about that.
You know, first of all, I'm just going to restate what a privilege it is to bring my whole self to a conversation and how quickly we're getting right down to it here. So thank you very much for that. I'm just going to say it because a whole bunch of theologians and people don't say it. And they say, oh, there are Christianities. Like it's in my world, it's good to say there are Buddhisms with an S, right? There's a plural. One of those, I'm going to say it because I'm, you know, whatever I am, and I'm in a position of privilege, and so I can sort of say this crazy thing that you don't have to believe. One of them isn't. The white European one, yeah, is actually an assault on what in Christianity would be called the Holy Spirit, right? In the form of, for example, animism, a pejorative term for the belief that so-called inanimate objects like spoons are alive and that things like ducks are people, right? And they would literally, the Catholic Church produced this big Latin statement, right? And they'd go out there, they probably didn't even know what it was themselves, and they'd read it out, and part of the statement was, and if you don't understand what we're saying, we're going to kill and enslave you now, right? And they inevitably didn't understand it, so they killed and enslaved them. And Howard Thurman, you know, Martin Luther King's teacher, was like, this is the blasphemy, yeah? This is the so anybody who is like feeling contaminated by that, well done, correct. That sucks, right? Just let's get that really crystal clear, you know. You can tell from the myth of Parsifal, right? Which is where we're going with this, right? Like, why did those people who, the Preskills, evangelicals, I don't know, fundamentalists, why did they vote for that guy? I think they voted for him not despite of him being a criminal moron, but because he was a criminal moron. Because there's this mythological being, you know, every country in Europe has its version of this, because it's basically every country in Europe defines itself as, we're not like those Jewish people and Islamic people who live over there, you know. You can be Islamophobic or anti-Semitic or both, but never neither, right? That's the Europe, that's what Europe is, right? That's what it foundationally is. Gil Anijar is the go-to philosopher on that, right? But anyway, Parsifal or Percival or whatever, right? Percival is this criminal moron who saves the Grail Knights, this idea that the blood of Jesus, of course, it's the blood, the living essence of this guy. We've got it because we're the white guys. We've got everything. We're going to get this thing. We're going to keep it in this forest for this little fascist community of knights here. But there's one problem. We're wounded. Wounded, you know, in Sieberberg's film of Parsifal, the wound is actually like a palpitating sort of lump of something on a plate. It's like, die Wunde, you know. And Parsifal kills a swan, which is death penalty in that world, right? So he's a criminal. And he's this big, beefy, lunkhead, blonde guy, like age-regressed previous guy, president guy. Yeah. And they ask him to save them, right, to get the spear and the grail and blah, 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 blah. And he cures Amfortas, the leader of the wound. And what is the wound? Well, it's quite obviously just about being, it's just called being alive. The wound of being afflicted with other life forms, right? The whole whiteness thing is about, I'm not like those other life forms, right? That's what it is in essence, right? I'm special and different. You know, the number of philosophers who say, humans are special because they construct their own world. Have you ever seen an ant? Have you ever seen a spider? This is the definition of a life form, that they construct their own world. This is not a thing, you know. If anything, curiously, humans exemplify what life is, funnily enough, by being more along the lines of having mercy on a good day, having just said all this stuff about incestuous violence, to their kids, because humans actually statistically have a lot less of it than other so-called animals. Funnily enough, it has just been established through much, much research. So what's curious about human beings is they are capable just about of letting their kids be different from themselves, right? AKA letting the future be different from the past. But that involves the wound, right? That involves, you know, something coming out of something that is like mutated. Everybody's a mutant, right? This is evolution, right? So it's deeply disturbing to this idea, this sort of life I've just invented this word to describe white guys like me, right? It's biophobia, people. It's life itself, it's not just biophobia, because it's reality phobia, right? Because why does life even exist? Because quantum theoretical things can cause molecules not to destroy each other. So this thing here that's about 56 years old talking into this microphone is roughly comically like this other thing that was about a day old. It's like 8 pounds. It's called a baby. Some of those chemicals didn't fight each other so much. They brought in nutrients and they rebuilt themselves. And in a funny way, life is a huge, big lithograph of the truth of a quantum theoretical universe in which the future can genuinely be different from the past, right? Simple proof. You can have a quantum random number that no algorithm can predict, no matter how many trillions of years you run it. Therefore, you can't know it. It's in the future, permanently, right? The future can be different from the past. It can be, people. Like, this is a thing to know. I feel like this is my job, to tell people who are younger than me that the future can theoretically very rigorously be different from the past, right? And so, like, I'll stop.
No, that's really good, because it seems that what you're, the heart of what you're getting at, though, is that that is literally built into our nature. That's part of being human, mm-hmm. being alive. And yet that is the thing that we are the most resistant to. We mm-hmm. want everything to remain as it is.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, being in this strange space where all kinds of very extraordinary physical sensations, I've done a lot of like Kundalini type yoga. So I know what I'm talking about here, but this born again thing is really freaky. You know, being in this funny space, I've been looking again at the Bible, you know, and like the very first few bits of it, right? Like Genesis. Yeah. And it says like the spirit of God hovering over the waters. And you look up the Hebrew word and it's like hesitating, hovering, quivering. These are all words from quantum theory, right? Like at the ground state, things are just kind of hesitating, quivering. They're neither one thing nor the other thing. They're just kind of blah, blah, blah. Nothing has zero energy. There's no flat anything. Everything's just like pulsing. And there's a word for that, which is thumos, which is the Greek word for pulse or palpitation or quiver. And it's like life, but not as a concept and not as a C.S. Lewis, if anybody was tortured by mere Christianity, which was not his intention, right? Because so I'm rereading it with Trina. We're like, wow, it's actually really cool when you're not tortured, being tortured by it. he lands on this word Zoe, which is the Greek word that's used in the Greek thing in the Gospels, right? But unfortunately, I don't think that's what Jesus really said. I actually think, as a Greek scholar, luckily, never give a poor boy the operating system. Yeah, because actually Zoe is a juridical concept. Zoe is like, this thing deserves to be in a zoo, and this thing deserves to be looking at the thing in the zoo. This thing deserves to live, and this thing doesn't deserve to live, right? That, and then there's bios, which is a scientific thing, right? I'm talking about thumos, which is the quality of alive, whether or not you, it's technically, scientifically, juridically alive, this quivering, beautiful. I think that's the life in Black Lives Matter, actually. It's just like, let people live. Just let people be able to just like go to sleep and dream, like, or randomly accidentally put their foot on your front lawn without you having the right to shoot them dead.
Yeah. Oh, that's really good. And one of the things I accidentally skipped over here, but that you talk about in the book that I wanted to make sure that we cover today. You talk about this concept of master versus servant as basis for understanding of the devil as seen sort of played out in society. The example that you give are white colonists and slavery. So talk about that a little bit.
I would love to. Okay, so what's really wrong with this world, right? So I'm friends with all these weird, crazy artists, right? I'm friends with Olafur Eliasson. He's an environmental artist. He's a beautiful guy. He's a Danish guy, Icelandic guy. And he phoned me up a few weeks ago. He's like, Tim, I've got a show in Los Angeles. And I came up with one title of his show once. So he thinks I'm really good at this, yeah. And he has this big laundry list of things that the title has to be, which is like, but Olafur, I do the words. You do the visual stuff. Can you just let me do the words? But whatever. And he's like, we can't have any nouns because nouns are bad. We must only have verbs because verbs are all about movement and becoming. And I said, Olafur, you're not cross with nouns, dude. You are cross with enslavement. If there's something to be cross with in this world, it's master and slave. It's not nouns. Nouns didn't do it. And a lot of nouns are like made out of verbs and vice versa, right? And on that subject, if you've ever been tortured by the Lord's Prayer, yeah, deliver us from evil, I looked it up. It's a neuter noun, yeah? Hoponeros, which is the person. It's like the evil person. Like, we can get away from evil people. Which is actually, I just said, is the quintessence of evil. It's like we can get rid of the evil person. We can fly a plane into it. We can fly a drone over it, right? And then you've got herponeria, which is a feminine noun, which is evil as a stigma, as a substance, right? Like this life thing that white people are so interested in excising from themselves and from the rest of the universe, right? As if you could cut it out, right? That's evil as a kind of thing, right? But Jesus didn't say that. Jesus said tuponeru, which toponeron is a neuter. It's a noun used as an adjective. It's fundamental, phenomenological evil. It's like saying, deliver us from green. Deliver us from up. Deliver us from sad, right? It's like that. Like, who cares about who did it? Who cares about who started it? We're not going to demonize anybody because that would still be doing it. We're not going to cut anything out of the universe because that would still be doing it. It's this transcendental. It's like what it's saying in a way is like, please remind us that we're actually 3D. We're not 2D. Deliver us from thinking that we're just 2D scrabbling around on this little 2D surface. Yeah. Oh my word. I got so excited that I lost track of the lovely question. I want to answer this question because it's very important. Please, can you restate?
Oh yeah. So you were just talking about this notion of slave versus master in regards to yeah.
Master versus slave is the problem. Oh, I got really carried away. And the trouble is, of course, in a PTSD thing, I just forget everything. Everything just blank out. So this is the main problem with our world. It's been a problem with our world for thousands of years, so it's very hard to see past it. So that, yeah, if you are going to look at language, a whole bunch of things like subject and object are because of this master-slave template, right? Masculine versus feminine, male versus female, active versus passive. And I firmly believe that there are the first inklings in thousands of years that this template is about to snap, and that one of the reasons why fascism is popping up all over the earth is that some people are freaking out about that. The good news is their outfreakage is evidence of the imminent snapping of this template, and it's in the word woke. When some Russian agent-like person accused me of being woke, I immediately got a necklace made that says woke in huge big pink letters, and I wear it around my neck as a sort of badge of pride, right? And in the word, there is this mockery, right? But to mock something means you know what it is if you're really going to be mocking it, right? Like, you know. Yeah. So within the mockery is the truth that one by one, those people are going to, at some point in the future, I'm quite Pollyanna-ish about this. I predict that they will fall to their knees and weep and start to beg forgiveness for all the crap that white people did for hundreds and whatever thousands of years. Right. It's in the word woke. The nasty attack on it, the attack on an African-American word that then also uses a sarcastic attack on white people. You know, why send troops into the street with all the with all the George Floyd murder protests, right? Because there's just enough white allies who have gone off script, right, to frighten the fascist people. Yeah, and they're using woke like that because they know it's over. It's over, guys. It's over. But there's nothing like a kind of like a zombie idea that doesn't know that it's over, just kind of walking around, you know, and to some extent, all ideas are zombies. That's the trouble, right? You can't really kill them. You just got to keep on whack-a-moling them over and over again. So this sort of anti-slavery, anti-racism future is going to be like constant, like examination and whack-a-molage of all this stuff. And it's going to be intense and boring and wonderful and sad and all these things, right? It's going to involve the thing called grief, you know. If we're gonna let that template snap, we're going to end up feeling grief. The first thing we're going to feel is like panic, rage, and some of the fascism's like, I don't want to panic, you know. What is my world if there aren't if there's nothing to enslave, right? Panic is it's the everything feeling, right? It comes from the Greek word for everything, but panic. And I speak here as somebody who has only just learned how to grieve because they've got so much to grieve, yeah. Panic is like the grief antechamber, right? It's like if you're feeling panic, it means that the door to grief is quite near and you just need someone to give you a little push. But you're like, I don't want to go in there. I'll panic. Panic is better in a way. I'd rather panic than go, please don't make me go in there, you know. Or as Antonio Banderas says, who's Puss in Boots in the Pixar film, at the end he said, whatever happens next, they will not cry. You know, it's sort of like that. And that's in the word woke. That's in what people are saying. Whatever happens next, they will not cry. You know, they're just about to weep, guys. Really, I promise. Take an old man's opinion about this for you know. So, you know, we've been treating the biosphere like the perfect servant, right? What could go wrong? What could go wrong? Right? We're making AI into the perfect servant. What could go wrong? Yeah, perfect servant, right? Like, we've never read any stories about the perfect servant ever, have we? You know, so like religion, you know, the sort of vanilla picture of it is like God is this perfect master. They're so perfect. You've got to have religion to fix all the little gaps in the way you serve them. Now imagine the inverse, which is the perfect servant. This guy does exactly what you tell him to do with all the unintended consequences thereof, right? This is every story you've ever heard about the devil, ever, right? This is every single, but this is also the biosphere, right? You wash your hands with antibacterial soap, you make the bacteria evolve. You get an avocado from Chile, you use a lot of jet fuel, right? By making the biosphere into the perfect servant, it's like you're creating Satan to come and send you to hell in the form of global warming. It's perfectly straightforward. Extracting chemicals to make your movement go faster and more efficiently turns life back into chemicals, right? Life is a thing that has mercy, is chemicals having mercy on themselves, right? But burned life isn't life anymore. It's just like burned chemicals. So you take this kind of oil and you extract it and you turn it into this thing. It's a very efficiently turning the world into this horrible, boring, nasty cartoon where one chemical is clobbering another chemical. And where's the fun in that, right? And so, like, if we're going to have a world of mercy, it's also going to be a world of, like, where remembering and forgetting become very strange, right? Like, some people like to remember things in the key of I'm going to hurt people. Like, I remember what you did. I'm going to do revenge, you know, right? Like, but then there's another kind of remembering where you're more responsible for it, which is the grief, remembering, right? Which is letting the memory sort of hurt you a little bit in a funny way, but in a soothing way. Like, this is what grief is, yeah? I know everything. Grief is your past desperately trying to give your future a massage. That's what grief is. Grief is everything that happened to you, and grief comes along and says, hey, I know this sounds crazy, but just lie on the bed in the fetal position, yeah? And it's crazy, right? You're going to scream, you're going to cry, you're going to laugh, you're going to feel really sick, like you want to throw up, because I'm going to be palpating your abs for an unspecified amount of time. And after you've finished, drink a lot of water, because this really was body work. And I know this actually from my friend who was a hospice chaplain, grief specialist, Sir Bonfu Somei's assistant. And I'm getting this from Sir Bonfu. Right, one of my main spiritual teachers, Dagara Shaman from West Africa, yeah, and she's all about grief rituals, right? Like, in that world of Burkina Faso, right, you want to get married, you have a grief ritual. You have a dispute with your sister, you have a grief ritual. You want to put a cat flap in the house, you have a grief ritual. They're so busy having grief rituals, they don't have time to take over the world, right? And, like, we need one massive, huge, big, how much is it going to be? Like, 100 years of truth and reconciliation, maybe, with one Desmond Tutu for every state in the USA, and that's just to cover the legacy of slavery, right, let alone all the other stuff. So, like, this, right, and people who are refusing to do it becoming more and more weaponized and violent, right? But in order to forgive, you have to a little bit forget, right? The phrase is forgive and forget, but actually I think it's forget and forgive. Like, when you're in the middle of a fight and you're like, wait a minute, why are we doing this? Like, this is stupid. I don't want to do this. There's this funny little moment where you just forget why you should be hurting the other person. Maybe hell is a place where you know exactly why to hurt the other person all the time. So it's very claustrophobic, right? No matter how many people you kill, you can never quite achieve the perfect world that you're trying to achieve, right? And so that's the hell. Whereas, funnily enough, like Dante, right, he goes up to paradise and he drinks the waters of forgetfulness and he's like, I know that I sinned. I know that I did. But it's not hitting me the same way as it was hitting me a few hours ago. I'm not hurting myself and other people with this fact. It's just a fact about me, right? Like, imagine getting to that state about the legacy of slavery. Imagine getting to that point where people be like, it was real. It really happened. We really did the bad thing. And how can we repair this bad thing, right? Really consciously, right? Like, we know, but it's not hitting us the same way. Right. It's not like making us do even more of it because we don't want to go through the grief process because we haven't heard that grief is the inner body worker that is actually all the stuff in your past trying to massage the future so it can be different.
Oh, man. I love that. One of the things that you talk about, too, that I wanted to make sure we touch on is simply because I read it more recently, probably like you, I kind of revisited some C.S. Lewis later in life from a very different perspective. But you talk about the internet as compared to C.S. Lewis's great work, The Great Divorce, which I thought was fascinating when I read it, you know, like I said, later on. Talk
cool.
About that.
Yeah, I really would. One of the reasons to be really mad at people in hell, I'm not talking about hell, like we're going to punish you and send you to hell. I'm talking about the attitude, the hell attitude that wants to send people to hell. You see, we've already agreed that the real hell is people treating people like that and go, you're going to go to hell if you, and blah, 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 blah. And on that subject, by the way, I looked it up again. Can I just say, just to help people, evangelize, yeah? Evangelize, the verb. There's at least three different like voices in Greek. There's active and passive, but there's also middle, right? Middle voice does not have a subject or object. Yeah, active has a subject, passive has an object, right? There's no real equivalent in English, so I can't really give you an example. There's a deponent, which is like, I'm having a house built. It's not really that. It's when we talk about becoming, it's a little bit like this middle voice, like it's a self-assembling something, right? Evangelize is a middle voice verb. You can't evangelize people, and you can't be evangelized. That's not a thing. Evangelism, from what I've experienced, and you're hearing some of it now, is more like a kind of spiritual Tourette's, where you just can't help going bleh in the most abject, possibly disgusting, embarrassing way to embarrass yourself and everybody around you. Bleh. Yeah. You can't evangelize people. It doesn't have a direct object, right? So to go back to this thing about C.S. Lewis's hell, right? One of the reasons to be angry is that you can't get through to people. You can't get through to people. Like, I woke up from this surgery coming down off of fentanyl, being injected with more fentanyl because I couldn't have the nice anesthetic because I have sleep apnea. And so I'm losing my mind and my ability to talk, and I'm trying to persuade the person to give me a glass of water. And probably what I'm saying is, blah, 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 and I'm dying of thirst, and she's not understanding. And I thought, gosh, you know, hell might be desperately trying to explain something to somebody. Don't you see? Don't you understand? Da, 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 da. If you have PTSD, the number of people who ask you to explain, can you explain why? Can you tell the story? Like, give me the detail. Like, stop. Just let this person be wounded in your psychic arms or real arm. Just like hold them psychically. They don't want to have to explain. They don't want to have to, like, because for them it's like the passport control, right? They can't get in to the niceness airport until they've explained themselves, right? So don't do that, right? Just kind of like, and on that subject, maybe the Garden of Eden was a consent thing, right? Like maybe the apple was not some drug thing. That's like Satan's, like, ooh, this must be this very powerful drug. I'm a Milton guy. The Paradise Lost is my thing, right? And maybe it was just like a consent, like a Me Too thing. You know, like consent is sexy. Like this, I've already had all these t-shirts that say consent is sexy. And maybe God is saying you can do anything you want. Just don't touch me there, right? Just don't touch the creation there. And you're like, but why? And you're like, it's over, dude. You ask me why? Like, why do I have to explain? This is a consent thing. As soon as you ask somebody why you shouldn't touch them wherever it is or do this thing, it's kind of over, right? Or they need to do a lot of work to recover from that, right? And so it's kind of like, just don't do it. Now you know what good and evil is because you touched me there. You violated my... You did a thing I didn't want you to do, right? If God is a person, God's got these consent rules. So hell is a place where you can't get to that intimacy, right? Because you're just trying to explain yourself to somebody to be included because you're feeling excluded. It's this basic narcissism, inclusion, exclusion. And what happens is the other person gets so mad, and this happens in reality, right? That they distance themselves from you, yeah? But in C.S. Lewis's hell, this literally happens. So you get cross with your neighbor, and your neighbor's house literally goes further apart from you. So hell eventually becomes a huge, weird, ghostly, because everything's been stretched apart so big. It's like suburb that's like millions of miles wide where your neighbor is basically on Saturn and you can't talk to them. So you're really mad now because they're doing stuff, but you can't even get through them. And what's even weirder and worse is that you can sort of see them, you know. And isn't this not our world? And is this also not, in a way, the internet, where you can be totally sure that you're communicating in modality X to someone? Like, I'm just putting an intimate note under your door, and they're sure that you're communicating in modality Y, namely you're pinning a note to my corkboard outside my door, right? And there's this fundamental, like, where am I? And no one's in charge of it. But of course, this was always true. It's just that the internet gives you this incredible tech to know that it's true. And what happens when pretty much everybody, I'm not being an elitist here, just anybody like me, has to undergo that all the time, right? What happens? Like, imagine the future where something like Google Glasses are a thing, and there's a search engine that has more data points than the Cambridge Analytica one that had 8. With 8 data points, they could get inside the head of every American and make them hesitate just a little bit to vote for Clinton. Yeah, which got the other guy. What happens when they have 12? Well, you're walking down the street and you're wearing Google glasses. Someone's inventing it. Someone in Dallas, who actually, unbelievably, is a Frankenstein scholar, who I know. And I'm like, do you know what you're doing? Oh, it's this beautiful library search engine. Well, don't worry. No, it isn't. It's going to get out. And then someone's with a gun is going to be walking down the street with Google glasses, and they're going to see people's unconscious mind, the basement level, right? The murder, rape, death, hurt, but it's, you know, forgive me, we all have these impulses, right? That's the safety, is to know that you have them, but they've got a gun. They don't think they have them. They're the goodie. What happens then, right? This is hell, right? So in order to avoid that, people, maybe, and this is a crazy thought, maybe what is contained in religion, like forgiveness and love, and is the way to save the world, maybe the planet scale politics is literally about these things. And of course, it's hidden ideologically. Oh, that's so corny. We must have a much more sophisticated, I mean, it's really big, so we must have a really big solution. But what if the ideologically the solution was tiny, right? Like tiny, teeny, tiny. Me and Trina have got this thing we call tiny Christianity. It's like just Jesus didn't say anything else. He literally just said, go into a room with two people or maybe three, and that's it. Do this thing with this bread, and there's no explanation. Just do this thing. That's all he said, right? Like, just imagine if that was it, like tiny, teeny, tiny. There's something about that that's just like awesome, you know. Like you maybe these little micro acts of love are in fact exactly what is scalable to planet scale, because we're talking about including all life forms and all of human beings in this project, right? And so how we treat each other is how we treat the biosphere. So ending slavery and patriarchy and white supremacy is hugely high on anyone list who cares, right? And it's got to be about this, yeah? But of course, the scoffing people are going, oh, love can save the world, blah, right? And it's like, what? But what if that was a true thing?
Yeah. Tim, this is the type of podcast that I'm gonna get in trouble. I'm gonna get yelled at because they're like, well, John, why didn't you go further into the? I'm like, there's so many points, so many juicy points in this book that we could have gone off in a multitude of directions. But this is absolutely an incredible conversation, and I want to leave the listeners with one final thought. What is your hope and intention for the book? What do you hope that?
Sure. First of all, John. Thinking is a team sport, right? And it really, and I can't do this without people. Like I couldn't do the book without Blake. I couldn't do this without you, right? And so coming up with these thoughts is because of you, right? And so thank you so much for allowing me onto this show, because we've been able to come up with some lovely things. Really, like I'm feeling that juicy too, you know. What I want people to come away with from the book, There really can be a different future. There really can be a different future. It's like the guy said, and the kingdom of heaven is at hand, right? And there really can be that, because why? Because actually at hand, oh dear, oops, I looked it up again. It's at hand. It doesn't mean imminent, like somebody with an Uzi is standing outside the door and they're going to come in and punish everybody, or somebody with a huge reward is coming. It's not that. It's like, handy, like the keys in your pocket. You don't have to think about it. You don't have to think about the kingdom of heaven, because it's the phenomenologically the same thing as the keys in your pocket, right? Or the stuff in your fridge. It's just there, right? It's there. It's at hand, right? The kingdom of heaven is at hand. It's like it's the availability is outrageous. Anytime you want, you can go there, even if you are the most brokenest person ever. And I'm talking here about like the higher power aspect of this embarrassing born again thing that's happened to me, which like I've done many things. I've done decades of therapy. I've done years of EMDR. I've done Buddhism, all of it, right? Compared to 1 second of just let go into knowing that you're a 3D. You are not 2D. There is another world. Right. And it's right there in the availability of this, of your hand. It is your hand. The kingdom of God is at hand because it is your hand. Right. It's handy. Right. It's right there. The future is right there. The Garden of Eden was literally like a couple of milliseconds, not even ago. Right. Check this out. Your sense of your environment is always a little bit delayed. Right, because nerve signals always come a little bit late, right? So your sense of your world is a couple of hundred, I'm not a scientist, milliseconds later. That means that the way the environment is for you, your biosphere is in the future. It's the future. All the jungles and the clouds and your sofa and your feet is the future. And the data that you're getting from that is kind of like the past, right? But the world that you live in is the future. And furthermore, a couple of hundred milliseconds later, your sentient system, and this is true of worms, so it's probably also true of plants, this is contemporary neurology, flips that upside down and creates the equivalent of like noise-canceling headphones, right? That head, shoulders, knees and toes, basic sense of self, not ego, but just like, I'm here with my knees and my butt, right, is a kind of environment-canceling headphones, right, which is, it's just a little tiny bit later than the environmental awareness, which is just a little tiny bit later than the actual, your actual body and your actual environment, right? Part one. Part two, in every religion, there's a VIP lounge. I'm just going to say this. Just trust me, I'm an expert. In every religion, there's a VIP lounge, and you go in the lounge, and they get all that stuff about a sadist who mostly wanted to hurt you wasn't really true, and you actually are this thing, or you're connected to this thing, or you're related to it. And your job now is just to notice that. Here's this instruction, right? The Christian one from the Middle Ages, the cloud of unknowing. It's beautiful. The instruction is the thing. Is the title. It's just be a cloud of unknowing. In Tibetan Buddhism, it's be like a corpse. Meditate like a corpse. Just be your body. Just be your brain. You know, like maybe art just lets you be your brain for a while. It's to be your brain. Yeah. And so you do this thing and you can't quite find it. You're like, what is this tantalizing? There's something there, but I can't. And if you have a nice teacher, like, boop, that's it. Do not adjust your set. This funny tantalizing out of reachness is all of the it that you need. It's out, like you were saying earlier, there's a kind of out, the out of reachness is the saving grace of being a nice guy, right? And so, okay, that's part two. I return to part one. Nerve signals always arrive a couple of hundred milliseconds late. And so blah, blah, blah. Your biosphere is tantalizingly out of reach. Your actual body is it's there, but it's just out of reach. It's at hand, but you can't quite touch it, right? In a kind of MC Hammer, so you can't get better than that, right? And so there is this perfect overlap between what it means to be a sentient life form, including a plant, and esoteric religion, right? Inside of nasty civilization religion space is all this indigenousness that's the real juice that makes it work. And that's the real juice that makes it work, right? And so you don't have to throw that baby out with the bathwater, or maybe you're throwing the bathwater out and keeping the baby or keeping that. I can't remember which one is which, but you don't have to. I can understand the impulse. And I had this impulse to reject my dad for years and years and years and years. And where I got the creativity from recently was to accepting my dad. And I know this is hard to think about, but it's kind of like you can't get rid of religion because that's also religion. Like Alice through the looking glass trying to leave the house and she always comes back to the front door. Instead, you've got to adjust how you relate to it, right? So I want to help you either to come into or to leave. It doesn't matter. Reject, brilliant. Except, awesome, there's a whole bunch of Brits who are getting into Christianity, would you believe? Just as there's a whole bunch of Americans getting out of it. It's possibly for the same reasons as the interesting thing. And I just wrote a book for both of you guys by accident.
I love it. That's the best pitch I've ever heard for a book, by the way. I love it. Well, Tim, thank you so much. This is so fun. Something tells me we could have gone for an indefinite period of time and had no lack of things to talk about. So thank you so, so much for coming on. I really had a good time.
John, it's been a deep honor and an enormous pleasure. And just thank you so, so much.
When did the size of our buildings become the foundation? So-called safety. Church, what have we done? No church. When will we ever see? Until we're all treated the same, that nobody is actually free.
Location, the lab. Quentin only has 24 hours to sell his car. Is that even possible? He goes to Carvana.com.
What is this, a movie trailer?
He ignores the doubters, enters his license plate. Wow, that's a great offer. The car is sold, but will Carvana pick it up in time for...
They'll literally pick it up tomorrow morning. Done with the dramatics?
Car selling in record time.
Save your time. Go to Carvana.com and sell your car today. Pickup fees may apply.